Japanese Grand Prix is go! Good reaction time, Oscar Piastri! Max Verstappen knew he was going to get a good time. He's squeezing him. Round the outside goes Lando Norris. Big crash. Big contact in the middle. Side by side they go. Max Verstappen hangs on to the lead. Oscar Piastri is down to third. Up to second place goes Lando Norris, who was brave. There was a wheel bump in the middle of the racetrack there, and it's one of the Alpines heading backwards. There's damage for an Alfa Romeo, but Verstappen, Julian, had to get his elbows out, and he maintained the lead.
Yeah, he did really well to do so, defending inside and outside. The two AlphaTauri side by side of Tsunoda going up the inside of Liam Lawson, who got him at the start. I don't know how Verstappen kept the lead there, with Norris charging on the outside and Piastri there on the inside.
Oh, it's very, very tight on the inside with the two AlphaTauri squeezing each other all the while. Are they going to make contact? Liam Lawson gets ahead. Car number 40 powers ahead of his teammate, so it's losing positions off the line. Yuki Tsunoda down two places to 11th.
Yeah, Lawson's got himself up into the top 10, and the safety car is out. Piastri on the inside almost goes onto the grass himself. There's the touch. Perez and Hamilton have a little touch. Then there's another one further back. Wow, that was big contact for Albon.
This is on board with Kevin Magnussen. Has his path blocked, and he's going to get a good view of the contact. That's amazing that Williams is still pointing in a straight line. That is Valtteri Bottas off the road.
Here's where Mr. Bottas then around the outside. Oh, he gets a whack from Sargeant.
Dive bomb move from George Russell on his teammate. Hamilton had to give him the space, and George Russell will have a smile a mile wide there because he's made the pass at the chicane, but Hamilton will not take that lying down. The two Mercedes not at the front of the field like they were last week. Over some debris goes George Russell there. Hamilton trying to retake seventh position. Russell thought about nibbling back, and Hamilton retakes the place. And there is Valtteri Bottas' day. He's gone out in the early part of the race today. Another late lunge. Oh, contact! Unbelievable! Round goes the Haas. Contact again for Perez.
Have a nose to the inside. He's coming from a long way back. He's nowhere near. Oh, it's really poor. It's really poor from Perez. That was a pretty poor-looking move.
And Sergio Perez has been told to retire the car. This is a hugely fast part of the racetrack as we plunge downhill. And you try to make the corner as wide as possible, trying to sweep around the outside, and no room given. Both Mercedes off the road. They might not be at the very front of the field this week, but they're continuing to give us amazing entertainment.
Who do you want to fight here, each other or all the others?
This needs to be another classic Red Bull stop. So many of the best pit stops this year have gone the way of this team. And he goes out. 3.3 is okay. That is the driver that he's worrying about on the exit of the corner. And they have played that to perfection once again. Really well timed and executed for Red Bull. Track position for Verstappen over Piastri as Hamilton comes in to get rid of those medium tyres. That is a wide moment for George Russell, and through goes Verstappen. So Russell not fighting it, even if he wanted to. It's another quick move. We're going through the right-hander. We're getting the spoon, and we move ahead. So Charles Leclerc ticking off the places nicely. And now we're looking at Carlos Sainz all over the back of his childhood hero, Fernando Alonso. Was the driver who started the Spanish love affair with Formula One, and he isn't going to be able to keep him behind for too much longer. There goes the Ferrari driver. The outside line will eventually turn into the inside line, and it will eventually turn into seventh place for Carlos Sainz.
They'll have a run this time down towards the chicane. No DRS at this stage. Going to be right with him through 130R.
And Hamilton going for the move on Alonso at the 130R. These two great side by side. And it's another great moment of brinkmanship. Alonso knowing there's nothing he could do to fight back.
Way quicker, I've just hit the deuce again. We're going to swap.
So Lando Norris finally takes second position after asking for the team order for the swap very early on. Had to wait a couple of laps, but he's finally up to second place. As Alonso gets ever closer, he turns that into a traction race. That is going to turn into ninth position. Tsunoda at his home race doesn't want to give the place away. And once again, we're seeing plenty of racing at this part of the circuit today. Down the hill, the 220R, and then into the spoon curve. And position gained for Fernando Alonso, now in ninth place. Pressure on the pit crews as they make these stops. We were expecting two for the day. the start of the Grand Prix. One is pretty adventurous.
I guess we've been undercut, yeah.
Yes, confirmed.
Here comes the move for second position. It will be eventually. And this is going to be a tidy pass to the inside. It's only for third at the moment, but it will be P2 later on. This is a DRS zone now for Piastri. There's the inside defensive shape. And around the outside to take his place on the podium. And he will bolt. He will give it everything he's got now. The Australian driver up to third.
Leclerc closer this time. Russell has to defend it. Here we go.
Trying to go the long way round. That's what it looks like if you're trying to overtake it for turn one. What great pitches. Crowd love that move.
Invert positions. Be careful of science with it. DRS though.
Well, we have now the last lap. And he just keeps the DRS like last week. Unless he's fighting for a bigger result.
So it's an instruction, George. Swap positions.
And he's going to feather up the throttle. Does Hamilton take the place? Yes, he does, to the inside. And then he tries to jump back in. Russell listening to the team's instruction. And here's the chance standing on the power as we go down the main straight. Russell needs that DRS. He's got the DRS, but he's also got Carlos Sainz tucked right underneath him. Russell's going to lose the position. Into turn one goes Carlos Sainz to take the place away and take sixth place. Max Verstappen comes out of the final corner for the final time. Max Verstappen wins the Japanese Grand Prix. Red Bull are champions of the world for the sixth time. They take the constructors' title for the second year in a row, the sixth time in team history.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome into Season 5. This is episode number 32 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are part of the Ship It Studios podcast network. And tonight we've got, look at this, we've got a triple box. It's been a long time since we've had this. I think this is actually the first time in the history of the show we've had these particular combination of hosts. We've got Andy, we've got Cody, Iron Man Street continues, and Deanna has joined us tonight. It is lovely to see you, my friend. How is everybody doing on this lovely Monday evening?
I'm doing great.
I'm good.
Just trying to forget about work for a few hours and go back to when times were better over the Formula One weekend. And yeah. So, loving it.
Yep. Good to be back. Starting to recover from the 1 a.m. race time. So get back to normal.
Yeah, my circadian rhythms have been in the absolute crapper for the last, between the Singapore race, which was the early riser, and this one, which was the late night. I'm glad we actually get a week off because I can actually sleep when it's dark out. But anyway, we'll get into all that in just a little bit. You can find our show, as always, Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube, do us a solid, click the like and subscribe button. If you like what you're hearing and you like what you're seeing, it just helps us get our content to you that much quicker. And if you happen to be on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if you could click that 5-star review, again, it'll just help us come up a little bit better in searches. And again, help us get our content to you that much quicker. Email the show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. The wonderful website, www.outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. As a reminder, thank you so much to our continued monetary supporters, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. Shout out to Kevin Kelly. He was giving me some fun tips on the multi-viewer program this weekend. So thanks a lot, Kevin. Appreciate all that. You can, if you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $1, $5, whatever you'd like to do. All goes into making the show better, buying new equipment, upgrading the equipment we already have, investing in this platform that we're recording on tonight. So it all goes into the back end of the show. We do it for you, and we appreciate the support as always. You can take advantage of our code OUTLAP from the good folks at Manscaped. That'll get you 20% off and free shipping if you are into those types of products. And If you'd like, if you're so inclined, check that out. And final sponsor, our buddy Vincenzo Landino. He has his F1 shirt line, thef1guy.com. It is F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. So go ahead and check that out. It's good stuff, and we would highly recommend that you check that out. All right, the particulars are now out of the way, and we will start with our headline of the day. Cody, we'll go to you first, then D, and then I'll take the rear on this one. So Cody, lead us off.
All right, my headline is The Revenge Tour is Real. There was anyone who was doubting Max Verstappen's form after the Singapore Grand Prix. All of those doubters have been silenced because, holy crap, Max had a fantastic weekend, destroyed qualifying, destroyed the race, single-handedly clinched that constructor's title for Red Bull for a second consecutive year. Not much else to say on that. I'm predicting he's probably going to win every race through the end of the year now. Yeah. It's going to be boring.
Yeah, I'm in the same vein. Back to the status quo, essentially. We had a fun weekend, and I think that may be all we get.
Yeah, my headline of the day is pretty much in line with you guys. That's pretty much what I figured. That was what we all kind of thought was going to happen. We all kind of called it the week before, and bang. I tried to do some positive affirmations all day Saturday night because that's when the race was on. And I was going, Red Bull, go blow up. Red Bull going to blow up. I just kept saying, Red Bull, go poof. The wrong Red Bull went poof. So I got it. It worked. Positive affirmations are real, but the wrong Red Bull went poof. All right. So we will start, as we are apt to do, with our qualifying recap. So going out in Q1, he did not set a lap time, and boy, did he have a bad weekend. Our American boy, Logan Sargeant, feels like he needs a hug at this point. No time set in the session. P19 was Zhou Guanyu. P18, Nico Hülkenberg. P17 was Lance Stroll. P16 was Valtteri Bottas. Advancing through to Q2, but going no farther. P15 was Kevin Magnussen. P14, Esteban Ocon. P13 was Alex Albon. P12, Pierre Gasly. And P11, another good strong showing here, Liam Lawson in the AlphaTauri. The top 10 from 10 to 1 in P10, Fernando Alonso. P9, Yuki Tsunoda. Hey, local boy doing good. P8, George Russell. P7 was Lewis Hamilton. P6, no two race wins in a row this time, Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. P5 was Sergio Checo Perez. P4 was Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. P3 was Lando Norris in the McLaren. P2 was Oscar Piastri in the other McLaren. Hey, front row start for the Aussie. And then P1 with a lap time. Boy, almost a half second clear of everybody else. Max Verstappen, 128.877. Wow. All right, thoughts on the qualifying? D, kick us off.
I guess just starting with Logan Sargeant. It's just, it's so painful. And I mean, that's 3 weekends, I think, in a row that it's been pretty dreadful. And contrasting that with what Liam Lawson's been able to do. And I think this was the first weekend, too, where James Vowles sounded a little frustrated because they're having to take out now resources to make spare parts of what they could be using for development for next year. So it's just getting to the point where I think it's costing them too much. And then you also compare that with another rookie that we will talk about in a second that's all the way up in P2. So it's tough. He needs to not be doing the things that he's doing, and it didn't, and we'll get to it, but it doesn't get better in the race. And I just the longer this goes on, the more likely I think they'll be getting another loan from Red Bull. So
I'm pretty sure Andy has said a few shows now that Logan Sargeant needs a hug. So it's getting worse than that now. It's painful to watch him going out in Q3 every week. Albon wasn't doing particularly well this weekend. Maybe wasn't suited well to the Williams, but Logan Sargeant isn't doing himself any favors by destroying the car over and over again. It's kind of starting to look a little, I hate to say it, Latifi-esque. That's not someone you want to be associated with when it comes to keeping your Formula One car in one piece. So, yeah, he's got to change something if he wants to keep that seat.
Yeah, the unfortunate shot, I felt so bad. The Williams mechanics And they're not doing, like, the production did, that's the appropriate shot, is you go to the mechanics in that minute, but they looked so forlorn because they're like, oh, great, here comes another late night and we don't know how bad it is. And then I think it was just happenstance that Crufty goes, James Vales is on the pit wall right in that same moment. And I'm just going, oh, man, you couldn't script this any worse if you're a Logan fan, or any better if you're one who doesn't want to see him on the grid anymore, because it just seemed to pile on. But, yeah, I mean, these mistakes were costly. Because he wrecked the car so bad, they tried to bring out the third chassis. That ended up even backfiring on Williams even more, because then the FIA got wind of what they were trying to do. And then so he has to start the race with Grant. Guess what? You're allowed to start, son, but now go sit on the corner here for 10 seconds and do a 10-second stop-go. You're lucky they didn't get him disqualified from the event as a whole because of that. So, yuck. I don't really know what else to say. And, you know, the kicker of it is his practice times didn't look bad. They weren't great. Williams wasn't going to do great here, but it wasn't bad. But, you know, that snap and into the wall and, oh, yuck, the wreck is bad, but just the way the car wrecked was even just worse.
Mm-hmm. On to a little bit of happier news. I imagine you're really excited about McLaren's qualifying performance, even if, you know, they were still about half a second short of the pole. But
this, I think, was probably the first qualifying session. Usually these are a heart attack for me. I always think something bad is going to happen. But it was just something about this weekend. I can't think, maybe back to like the 11 and the 12 years, where it was, I didn't think they were not going to make Q3. Even when the track ramped up in Q1, I'm like, oh, okay, they went out, and, you know, if they put in a lap, and as long as they keep the thing on the track, it was going to work. So I it was a strange feeling. I really don't know how to feel about it other than, hey, they were really good, and that was awesome to watch.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was happy to see, you know, I like Lando Norris, but it was really cool to see Piastri get the leg up on him for one qualifying here, and starting on the front row there. Didn't think he stood much of a chance when the race got going, but it's still cool to see. And yeah, other than that, what else we got in qualifying here? Charles Leclerc doing better than Sainz for a race. Lewis Hamilton doing better than Russell, which is good. I guess that hasn't happened a lot lately.
Yeah, I mean, it almost, if you take Perez out of it, it's almost a 2x2x2, you know, lineup of kind of really where the ordering was this weekend. So you can kind of see kind of where everybody was on pace and who's upgrading and who's not.
I mean, it just touching back on McLaren again, it's just still, I don't remember the last time we saw any team get remotely close to the development curve they've had over the course of a season in season. It's just remarkable. And yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And to get a rookie up there on the front row is great. And then hopefully they just keep getting a little closer in the off season. So maybe next year is a little bit more exciting, because I think a Verstappen versus Norris title fight would be.
Verstappen versus both of them. Verstappen versus both of them, I think, would be amazing. And I have my slogan. So if there's a McLaren admin out there that has it, and if I see this, I'm going to get pissed, because I'm going to coin it here tonight. McLaren's theme for next year is, we're going to lasso that bull. That's the slogan. That's what they should go with. That they got to reel them in and lasso the bull. And we all know what bull we're talking about. So
I like it. I like how you're saying, too, it's Verstappen against McLaren and not Red Bull versus McLaren.
Oh, yeah. It's just the one.
Certainly not right now. All right. So we will flip over. I'll save kind of my McLaren thoughts for the podium when we actually get there. I actually have some exclusive knowledge that I gained over the course of the weekend. So I'll do some dropping of names in just a little bit. But we'll start with the back markers. Lots of non-finishers here. The non classified DNFs are Valtteri Bottas, Sergio Perez, even though he came back out, and we'll get into all that in just a little bit. Lance Stroll, Logan Sargeant, I think that was enough. Son, just go sit down for a while. And Alex Albon in the other Williams, bad weekend for them. Classified finishers in our backmarkers, P15, Kevin Magnussen, P14, Nico Hülkenberg, and P13, Zhou Guanyu. A couple big things we should talk about in the backmarkers. Cody, what would you like to start with?
Oh, probably Sergio Perez, who is the butt of many jokes right now because somehow we got a double DNF from Red Bull and Max Verstappen won the race. So that's got to be a once-in-career thing. Yeah, he looked not real great pretty much from the first lap. He, I think, lost some positions there at the start. You know, qualified fifth, which wasn't awful, but a little bit behind, a little bit more than a little bit behind Max. And yeah, as soon as he got into, he got wing damage on the very first lap, I think, right? And then pitted, yep, got the wing changed, and then that came to the part where he spun around the Haas of, man, I can't remember, was it Magnussen or was
I think it was K-Mag. Yeah, it was K-Mag.
Yep.
Yeah, that pass looked like it was never going to happen. It looked reckless and clumsy and just made his day go even worse. And then retired the car, thought that was the end of things, but no, Perez is probably going to get a grid penalty for the next race since he was going to be out and can't serve the penalty that he was going to be given. So they fixed up the car just enough to send him out for a little while to serve that penalty and then retire the car again. I heard a lot of people crying foul over that. I guess it's completely legal, although really goofy. But yeah,
definitely it won't be anymore, weekend. But it was then.
Yeah, definitely another weekend to forget for Sergio Perez.
I mean, the first lap incident is excusable. Sainz moved over, Perez nowhere really to go, and he moved straight into Lewis Hamilton, and then kind of chaos ensued from there. But that one on Magnussen is maybe the most egregious incident I've seen in quite some time. And the most telling thing was when they were in that cool down room, Max saw the replay and just goes, interesting. Like, it was just the perfect moment and got a cap on that whole thing. But yeah, oh God, it's just, it's painful. It's so painful to watch. And it, yeah, I mean, there were some highlights back in 21 when he really helped Max with that. I mean, Abu Dhabi in particular was eventful. But yeah, this is just, I just, more performances like this, and I see Red Bull kind of doing Red Bull things and axing him and filling him with one of the three AlphaTauri drivers, as they announced it in a weird way.
Yeah, I guess we'll get into this here. So it was announced, the announcement we talked about even in our preview, where it was AlphaTauri have announced Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda, Liam Lawson to be the reserve driver for Red Bull / AlphaTauri. It's the subsequent reporting that has come out is still kind of on the fringes, but I'm comfortable enough going with it that apparently Red Bull apparently likes to promise seats to whoever wants to come fill them, and they have a myriad of drivers, so this doesn't make a whole ton of sense because they promised Ricciardo, they said, you can go to AlphaTauri, but we'll guarantee you a seat in F1 next year. So they had to honor that. That was one of Ricciardo's stipulations. He didn't want to just come back for half a year and then go back to going away. So they have to honor that. They've now told Liam Lawson, you are guaranteed a seat not next year, but in 2025. So, that makes life even more interesting. That's the last year of these current engine regs, the last year of the Honda branding on that car. I wonder what Yuki Tsunoda must feel like minutes after signing his contract. Oh, yeah. And now we have Sergio Perez turning into a missile on track. The move against Kevin Magnussen, like you said it, Cody, and you said it real right, Deanna. That's egregious. There is no room for that ever. That is him turning his car into a missile and deciding to take somebody out. There was no way in any universe that move ever gets pulled off ever in that hairpin. So if he wants to not be in Formula One anymore, Sergio, you're certainly showing it. What a far cry from when we all thought he might be the championship contender in Miami. Yikes.
I just think unless he has the most miraculous few races here at the end of the season and the start of next season, I don't think there's a way that Red Bull keeps them through the end of 24, being who they are and who they kind of have in the wings here. I am frustrated that Lawson doesn't have a seat. I mean, granted, they didn't know once they brought Ricciardo in that he'd get injured and that this would be a thing. But if they obviously ignore contracts anyway, so they should have let Lawson, he had these five races. Ricciardo will have the rest of the season. You compare their performance at that point, and then you go from there. I just don't understand really what Ricciardo has to offer at this point. That being said, like, I think putting in AlphaTauri is made for their young drivers, and this to develop their young drivers. So stick a young driver in that car, let them develop, and then decide who kind of goes into Red Bull from there. I just think we kind of know the story with Ricciardo, unfortunately. And maybe he can have this whole huge resurgence, but I don't know. They just invest in all of this young talent, and that's what they have done so well for so many years. So anyway, I don't know. That's my two thoughts.
It's an odd thing that they're doing, while in the same way flexing the power and influence that they have, and it's an odd, it doesn't make sense to me. You got this kid in Lawson who's come in and done everything that you've asked, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's. Oh yeah, and has scored almost as many points as a guy who's been in the car the entire year on a track that he didn't know. And goes pretty well here as well. I mean, he was the top finishing AlphaTauri. I don't know what else you're expecting. I mean, I get, Danny Ric should come in for the rest of this season, but you could have swapped it. You could have just said, hey, Perez is no longer the guy. We'll buy him out. And you put Ricciardo and Max and you have that for a year and you see if that works and you got Lawson and Tsunoda. That, to me, at least, would align your talent base with what you think you have. But maybe I know Perez does bring a lot of sponsorship money. Maybe those buyouts are a little too expensive right now at the moment.
But I don't think Red Bull is hunting for money right now. Like, they're not in any, I don't think they need the money from Perez.
No, my question would be, is they buy him out, and we know driver's salaries are not part of it, but that type of a sponsorship thing, does that then hinder their cost cap? That would be kind of my thought on that would be, okay, well, if you're spending it on dead money, does that mean you can't spend it on car development? That would be the only angle I think that makes sense.
I guess it doesn't. I don't really know how it works if it's a driver who's no longer driving for you, but I know that like driver salary and like top exec salaries, I believe, are not subject to the cost cap. Yeah, I guess it gets a little weird if you're paying a driver that you no longer have need for. But it'd be kind of an interesting experiment. I figured they got to let him finish out the season because, you know, we know Red Bull's pretty ruthless when it comes to, the drivers they put in their seats. But at the same time, he has helped them win a second consecutive constructors title, even though, Max did all the heavy lifting. It would be pretty poor form to Perez if, they said, thanks for helping us win this constructors title. By the way, you're out of a job for the rest of the season.
Oh, no, I agree with that. I'm just surprised they don't, day one after Abu Dhabi, they don't just make the leap and just say, whoops. Yeah. And that could still happen. I mean, this is just what it's announced today. It's always the fun of you never know really what's set and what isn't.
driver management.
Any thoughts on Sergio being allowed to come back into the race even after pulling the car into the garage? I have an award for that, so I guess I'll save my thoughts there, but I'll let you guys talk about it here.
It's legal, technically. I mean, he did get back to the garage under his own power, which I guess is kind of the dividing line between, being permanently retired from the race is if you can't get back to the garage under your own power, then you are out. And I mean, it was a good strategic call, I guess, by Red Bull to, even though he was a dud and wasn't going to do anything for the rest of the race, to get him out there and serve that penalty. It's definitely quirky. And, I would say a way to skirt around that penalty, because honestly, it's not going to hurt him if he's already, 43 laps down. I think they really should have said, no, you can't do that. And you have to take the grid penalty in the next race. But I imagine they're going to close up that loophole pretty soon.
My frustration here, which going to go slight in a different direction, but when was the last time you saw somebody get that kind of penalty carried over? I don't personally remember it. But as we have learned, as they issued a statement, the stewarding is not consistent anywhere we go here. So, like, I get Red Bull trying to avoid the loophole. But anyway, that is my kind of basis of this frustration, is that we're not even sure if that penalty would be applied or not. But F1 stewarding, I've always had an issue with. But it is bizarre. And like Cody said, like, technically a marshal didn't touch the car. So he got back on his own power. So I guess he can go back out. Bizarre. It's just bizarre. I didn't think we need to sit and look at him sitting in his garage for as long as we did, but whatever.
Yeah, there was a lot. I want to know what that device was that was like over the front of the car, because that thing looked interesting. Whatever it was, that was attached to it for a while. But the only part that I think was actually material to the race. Now, look, I don't think that as good as the McLaren pace was, that either Lando or Oscar were ever going to catch Max. Max could do what he wanted. But when Perez is coming in and there's that virtual safety car, he holds up Lando for like 15 seconds while he's trundling his car back in. And Lando's screaming at his pit wall, telling him, can I pass him? I don't know if I can pass him. I don't want a penalty. There's no reason for it. And by the time they sorted it out, the VSC ended anyway. And it cost Lando about maybe 7 to 9 seconds of actual track time. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking maybe about a 10-second victory instead of a 19. Big deal. Maybe you can argue that. That's fine. I don't think it affected the outcome of the race. But that's gray. And if Perez is trying to trundle back for that, like there's got to be some sort of a signaling or some way to resolve that. So that was the only frustration on my part, other than looking at the timing screen and all of a sudden watching his name go dark and then light up and say plus, you know, 6 laps to the next guy. And then he goes and does a lap and now he's 5 laps down from the next guy. And it reminded me of, and NASCAR used to have this type of rule where drivers would come out, they'd run a lap on half a car and then, you know, go back to the garage. And then NASCAR said, you know what? We're not with that. It's not safe to have cars in those conditions. So if your car can't continue, but after the 5 minutes that you can try to fix it, guess what? You're done. It obviously looks like they're going to fix this loophole. We're not going to probably see this ever again. Thank you, Red Bull, for pointing out the flaw in the machine yet again. Kind of dumb chess, considering I don't know what they actually gain out of it.
One last little bit before we move on to the midfield. We did have another missile in the race. Poor Logan Sargeant piled it on in qualifying. We're going to pile it on a little bit more here. Had pretty much an equally poor move trying to pass Valtteri Bottas and spun him around pretty much the same way, wrecked both the races. And yeah, as soon as they go to that shot, you see all the smoke coming up from the tires. Same thing, never going to make that move. Can give Logan Sargeant a little bit more of a pass because, you know, he is a rookie. We've been, you know, giving him a lot of passes for being a rookie, but at least that kind of move, it's like, all right, your first year. Perez, how long he's been racing? Yeah, it doesn't get the same pass.
I mean, I would almost be saying, if I was like his advisor, just be clean in the next race. Even if you're slow, just bring the car home, for the love of God, man. You know, take the 0.25 seconds of extra margin that you need. Because, yeah, I think they can accept a slower car that might be on the up and up. They can't accept going into their reserves into parts like they're doing and causing their mechanics these late nights and breaking curfew and almost getting kicked out of the event. That can't continue to happen. It's got to get better, and it's got to get better quick. I'm hoping that, like, if he comes to COTA in a couple races time, that maybe that can give him a boost, but it does not look good. I can't sugarcoat it any better than that.
It's just unfortunate because there's not like a lot of flashes of speed within all of these mistakes as well. It's just been a little tough across the board, which does pain me to say, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've seen the comparisons to, if they could only make Super Formula or make F2 as good as Super Formula, then they could develop drivers better, but.
It worked wonders for Lawson.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. All right. We will leave our back markers here, and I'm sure they're just happy to have the Japanese Grand Prix in the rearview mirror. So we will move on to the midfield. P12 was Yuki Tsunoda. He made Q3. He did not bring it home in the points. P11, there's that impressive gentleman from New Zealand yet again, Liam Lawson, and the other AlphaTauri outscoring his teammate, even if they don't get points. P10, Pierre Gasly. P9, Esteban Ocon. Got to talk a little bit of Alpine at the end of that race there. P8, Fernando Alonso. P7 was George Russell, who tried to make a one-stop strategy work on a track with high tire degradation. That sounds like a recipe for success, but he comes home in P7. P6, Carlos Sainz. P5 was Lewis Hamilton. Him and his teammate got into it quite a bit this weekend. And P4, Charles Leclerc and the other Ferrari, the top Ferrari scorer on the day. Lots to talk about in the midfield. It's probably where they should have focused most of the attention of the race. It looked like they did a decent job of that on race direction. D, I'll let you go first. What you got?
Yeah, I'll actually start back with Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda. So I think Liam, I believe, kind of got ahead in that first lap, but he got undercut by Tsunoda, but then they let him have the undercut back. And so for those last, it looked like about 5, 6, 7 laps, Tsunoda was in a half a second. They talked about it a bit on the broadcast that they were coaching him to keep him ahead. I don't know if eventually they just kind of give team orders or not, but he did a decent job. Tsunoda's in a half a second and he never got by, or they never let him by either. So I think just, again, another impressive performance from him, and is another reason why he should probably be in that car next year, but whatever.
Cody, big thoughts on the midfield?
I thought that the action between Hamilton and Russell was some of the best parts of the race. Hamilton was driving with his elbows out this race, man. Like that part where he drove Russell off the track, I was like, ooh, that's kind of like penalty territory maybe. And you figure you don't really see a whole lot of those between drivers on the same team anyway, because, you know, you're arguing with yourself really. So Mercedes is probably sitting there going, no, we don't want to get a penalty for Hamilton. So, but yeah, really good action between the two of them. I really liked at the end when Russell was trying to persuade Mercedes to, let him try the Carlos Sainz trick with the DRS, keep them both ahead of him. The team said, no, you got to let Hamilton through. And then they tried that anyway. It didn't really matter though, even if Russell had the DRS, because those tires were pretty worn down doing the one stop. Carlos Sainz, made a nice clean pass, but it, held him up enough that he didn't get Hamilton by the end. So, pretty good racing there. Really like to see Hamilton showing everyone he still got it.
Do you attribute any of that extra action to Toto Wolff not being there? I saw the meme, the Wolf's away, so the Mercedes boys will play.
Maybe that's got a little bit of something to do with it. You don't have your boss breathing down your neck, so you're gonna do whatever you feel like. And, I feel like then he comes back, says, what the hell are you doing? A little bit of a slap on the wrist, no harm, no foul. They both finished the race, which is more than you could say for last week. But I think made for some good racing, and I hope they let them continue to race each other going forward.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the beginning of things bubbling up between these two, because George was definitely looking out for George. Whether or not he made the right decisions is another thing. I think trying to do a one-stop on a high-deg track was a choice. I also I think had they let George do, I think there's a lot of opinions on this, but had they let George pull the quote-unquote signs, if that's what we're calling it, I think Sainz may have ended up getting both of them, especially on this track. It's much easier to overtake in Singapore. I don't think that he had the life in his tires that he did. He would have held up Hamilton. It probably, I just think, would have been a bit of chaos. And so they kind of minimized the damage to Ferrari. But the move on Hamilton was also a little questionable. So I don't know. It was fascinating overall. Some great racing in the middle, other than the one incident. But yeah, I think that they're starting to butt heads here, so that'll be interesting to see how that goes, especially if that car gets more competitive.
Yeah, that's a great point. At some point, if you saw what they were willing to do to try to get a race win last week, if that becomes more and more the norm, or they have more opportunities, both of those are guys that have to feel like they have to do it now for different reasons. George to establish himself and Lewis to try to hang on as long as he can, because he knows the minute that he's no longer a tenth or two or within that range, you know, Father Time catches up with everybody, and no matter how good you are. So he knows that the pressure's on and he's going to be wanting to perform. And I thought it was interesting, his post-race kind of debrief, his post-race sound sounds for the first time not in full lockstep with that team. Since he's gone there, he's always been very much faith in the team, thought the direction, and he looks over at the development curve of what the McLarens were able to do and how they were able to do it. And he's just stunned that they're not able to do it at Mercedes, or haven't been able to do it at Mercedes. And I think it comes back to the point we've made on this show many times. Who did the pivot first? Who took the pain first? Well, now you can kind of see how, what that's going to do. And you have to go through that kind of development curve in order to get there. Now, I think next year might be a different story. They've got a whole new fresh set of eyes on that car that can do, you know, development from day one. They're not going to have to do the same pivot of concept. But pressure's going to be on that team to perform and come out the gate strong next year. Otherwise, because the rest of the field is just keeps coming at him.
I don't really blame him for maybe not having 100% faith in the team at this point, because, you know, last year, you know, they fell from being that super dominant top team, but at least they were still second, and they seemed pretty clearly second, you know, starting in the second half of the year when Ferrari started to falter. But this year, you know, you had Aston Martin appearing to be the second fastest car at the beginning of the season. Now McLaren has rocketed up the order and is now seemingly the second fastest car. You got Ferrari taking a win. So they're pretty well set in the midfield right now. And I don't think that's how he envisioned finishing out his career. I think he wanted to go out more with a bang, you know, kind of like Schumacher did the first time round, where, you know, finished second in a close championship and then decided, okay, you know what, that's it, that's done. I went out on a high note and it'll come back. But, you know, I think that's kind of more what Hamilton was going for. And it's not turning out to be that fairy tale ending just yet.
I will say what's kind of fascinating about Mercedes is they have been definitely the most consistent of the Ferraris, the Aston Martins, the McLarens, but I don't know that they've ever felt like the second fastest team this season. So I don't know. It's consistent, but it's just not. It doesn't feel like they're going to threaten Red Bull anytime soon.
Yeah, consistent, good execution, above average execution most weekends. The George call to go on a one stop confused the hell out of me. I didn't know why he thought that that was going to work. I don't know if Toto's there. Does he override that and just say, George, what are you doing? But that was definitely Russell's call on the road to do that. So that was kind of strange. You don't usually see Mercedes make a strategy blunder like that very often. But yeah, I mean, it's so tight in that midfield. I had to say, I loved Carlos Sainz's radio. Ah, they're trying my move. And they did it poorly to boot. Any other big thoughts on the midfield before we move into the podium?
Just that I barely missed out on getting some good points for our further back spots in our awards game, because I just needed Alonso to lose one spot and Yuki to pick up one spot. And I think I would have had the full three spots. But
yep.
Oh, well, Gasly couldn't get Alonso, and then that led to a little bit of a fit. Yeah. But I think that was mostly because the team didn't communicate with him that he'd have to give the spot back. And he was not too pleased at the end there.
What was he expecting, though?
Well, he was a few seconds behind. He was catching Ocon, and then they let him around and then to go get Alonso. And then they told Ocon that he would give this place back, but I don't think they told Gasly that. And so, like, last quarter of the last lap, Gasly finally gave it up and said, okay, fine. But he let it go. He took one out on his halo, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard some of the – in the post-race, yeah, he was not a happy camper, and people were avoiding being around him for a little bit while he cooled off because it looked like he needed it. All right, I guess we will move into the podium. First time on the podium in his career, in his rookie year, finds Oscar Piastri in P3. I've called him sometimes the Magic P7. This year it looks like it's the Magic P2 for Lando Norris. Yet another second place for him. And in first place, no shocker here, Max Verstappen. Guy could have done pretty much whatever he wanted to, whenever he wanted to, this weekend in the Red Bull, taking the win and the fastest lap, which he did right after he put his set of hard tires on, just to show everybody how much faster he really was. DL, I'll let you go first on this one. Thoughts on the podium?
It may be just delusion because Max has won so many, but like 19 seconds behind and Norris got held up. And like, I guess there was a safety car in the middle there. It doesn't feels like it's getting better. It feels like they're maybe starting to close a little bit. Again, I think it's just delusion as the longer this goes on. But again, I mean, it was McLaren were nice, cleared away of the Ferraris, of the Mercedes. It was a great race for them. And I think Piastri is still definitely, he's still definitely a rookie, still definitely not as fast as Norris. I think he will get there, or he'll get much, much closer as he learns. But awesome to see a rookie on the podium. And yeah, Norris, I wish that car was just a bit better and we'd be in for some fun, for sure.
Yeah, it looks pretty clear from the finish times that Piastri isn't quite up to Norris's level just yet. He did finish a good, 17 seconds behind him. There was one point where Norris came up behind him and Piastri was trying to defend the position and Norris said, look, I'm way faster. You're getting tricked by the dirty air. And they let him through and he opened up a pretty good gap. But definitely very exciting to see Piastri get a podium in his rookie year. I think he's a very strong teammate for Norris, and you know, within a year, they might be on an even playing field and competing for wins, hopefully. 20 seconds is a pretty good gap to first, though. I think we start seeing it shrink down to like 5 seconds,
then
I'll believe the game is on. But 20 seconds, man, like Max must have had something bugging him about not getting wins for the rest of the season. Was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to show you guys just how much I can win by pole, by a mile, winning the race by a mile, fastest lap. You know, just barely didn't get all the laps led, so just missing out on that Grand Chelem, but pretty darn close. So hats off to Max this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, just to start with my boys, never thought I would see this year. If you had polled me the day we did the testing recap, I was upset. I was angry. I was like, my God, we're going to have another year like 2017 all over again. Lando Norris is punching walls. Will Buxton called them the 10th fastest of all the 10 teams. It was a bad spot. It was not good. And the first few races, they tried to get it together and my heart absolutely sank in the first race in Bahrain. They're going down the back straight and Alfa Romeo's and Williams cars are passing Lando left and right. And there was nothing he could do about it. He's got his foot flat on the floor and it didn't matter because the car was just that bad. And I was just like, that was what, you know, testing shoot out alarm bells. That made me feel like, oh man. But to go from that to this, like, the shock thing in Great Britain, I think, came a lot quicker than anybody thought that they were going to do. And they showed so well there. And then, you know, they had a little hiccup in Belgium and a little hiccup with strategy in Zandvoort. And, you know, there were some things that they still got to iron out. But my God, Mika Häkkinen was right. I didn't even believe him. And I'm the table bearer of the team. So shame on me. But hot damn. Piastri's move at the start, I love the fact that he went for it. He wasn't ever going to pull that off, but he made Max commit, and he almost did a pincer move to allow Lando to go around on the outside. I even said right at the start, I'm like, Lando lead. I didn't even get to say leads because it was gone that quickly on the onboard. And then you just watch Max pull away. 1.5 seconds per lap is what he could do, whatever he wanted to. And the qualifying, when Max pulls his pole lap, I watch a lot of the timing, and I watch the mini sectors, and I think it's so telling because a lot of times, even when a guy will set a purple sector, you see a lot of green and then a purple mini here, a purple mini there. This thing was purple, 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 purple in the first sector, with Norris doing a great job and Piastri doing a great job in that first sector. That's how dominant this car was at that track with that driver in it. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. So yeah, they've still, everybody got some work to do to catch that guy, but at least they were in the arena, I guess.
That pincer move at the start is the best shot of the race, where you've got McLaren's on either side of Verstappen and you have the accident unfolding in the background. Definitely the best shot of the race, when there was still a little bit of hope that anyone other than Max was going to win it. But yeah, I've seen that shot like all over, you know, Formula One news, and it's a good one.
Do you any other thoughts on the podium or Max or anything? Or
I mean, it's just an unbelievable combination, and props to Red Bull as a whole for running the constructors. Max, all of the engineers, all the people on the aero, Adrian Newey, the whole team, strategy, pit stops, it has been an unstoppable machine. So, yeah, it's just incredible to watch, if a little bit boring.
I'll echo it on the boring factor. I wish he was a little more rootable for sometimes, but talent and respect, again, I tip the cap. That was an amazing performance. Mm-hmm. All right. I guess as Cody's cat makes an appearance on our video there, we will take a quick break. We'll re-rack. We'll come on back. Cody will pet the cat a little bit. Might feed him in the break. But we'll come back. We'll recap where all this flushes out in the driver and team standings. Then we'll open it up to your takes on what you saw this weekend, the fan email segment. We've got some good submissions there. We'll do our awards. We'll talk predictions. I actually want to talk predictions, so what does that tell you? So come on back. We'll get into all that in just a little bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 Podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back in. This is Season 5, Episode number 32 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. It's our 2023 Japanese GP Race Review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with both Deanna and Cody tonight. And we just wrapped up talking about the GP itself. Cody, as we are apt to do, if you do the driver standings, I will get you on the teams. Where does everybody flush out after this weekend?
All right. Well, no surprises that Max Verstappen is still P1 in the driver standings. Now with a whopping 400 points, he is 177 points ahead of his teammate Sergio Perez in second place. There's only 180 points left up for grabs, so it looks like, barring anything catastrophic happening, that Max Verstappen will be clinching that driver's title during the weekend in Qatar. In third place, we have Lewis Hamilton from Mercedes with 190 points, closing the gap up to Perez just a little bit. Still holding on in fourth place, we have Fernando Alonso for Aston Martin with 174 points. Fifth place, the top of the two Ferrari drivers, Carlos Sainz with 150, and right behind him, his teammate Charles Leclerc with 135 points. Lando Norris continuing to move up in the standings. He's still in seventh place, but now only 20 points behind Charles Leclerc with 115 points. And tied with him on points is George Russell from Mercedes, also with 115. Oscar Piastri making up good points this weekend. He is in ninth place for McLaren with 57 points, and still somehow holding on to 10th place, despite not scoring a lot of points lately, Lance Stroll for Aston Martin with 47 points.
All right. So for the teams, the constructors' battle is done. Red Bull Racing Powertrains had clinched the 2023 Constructors World title. They sit on 623 points. A far cry from P2 Mercedes. They check in with 305 points. P3 is Ferrari, 285 points. P4, Aston Martin, check in with 221. Only 49 points now in front of P5 McLaren Mercedes. They come in with 172. P6 is Alpine. They check in with 84. P7 is Williams on 21. P8 is Haas on 12. P9 finds Alfa Romeo on 10 points. And in P10, with those 5 points now, AlphaTauri Honda with those 5 points. All right. So we will now turn it over to your opinion on what you guys thought over the course of the race weekend. It's the fan email segment. Dee, it's nice to have you back. So it is now your time to shine. Take it away.
All right, so starting with Rachel Fleming, she says, "Hi, guys. Normal service did resume. Max was on another level all weekend. But what an appalling race from his teammate Perez. Managed to DNF twice. I mean, it hardly matters to Red Bull since Max won constructors on his own, but his hopes of keeping a seat in 2025 are getting smaller all the time. But at least he'll have a seat in 2024, which is more than I can say about Logan Sargeant. I know it's great to have an American driver on the grid, but James Vowles and the team look like they're losing their patience now. The reaction to his quali accident was very telling. If Williams want to move forward, I think they may cut their losses here, especially with Felipe Drugovic, Liam Lawson, and even Mick Schumacher on the sidelines." So I know we talked a lot about this, but I guess any thoughts on who the Williams replacement driver should be, if there should be one?
I would say, isn't Felipe Drugovic is in like the Aston Martin junior program, right? Yeah.
He is the junior program for Aston Martin. It's a program of one. That's him.
It would be really great for him to get in there and get some experience. I'm not sure. I mean, I for a change actually kind of watched that Formula 2 championship, and he was good. I don't think he was, miles clear of the rest of the field. So I guess I'm not as confident in his ability. Liam Lawson would be great, but he's got, pretty good. I mean, he's not getting that seat right away, but he's still got a pretty good thing being in the Red Bull Racing family. And I think, I think Mick Schumacher's career is probably done. So I think they should probably stick with him for at least one more year. And I know that's, giving him a lot of benefits of the doubt considering his performances so far this year, but I think he's really just kind of in his own head, and might need some time off, over the winter to refresh and refocus. Fingers crossed that he can start pulling it together, but I personally think they're going to stick with him one more season.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the alliances and kind of the way that kind of works and kind of affects who can do what, Red Bull would have to loan Lawson out in a similar manner that they tried to do with Albon, and then they eventually just cut ties with Albon and let him stay at Williams. I don't see them wanting to do that, especially since if that report is true that, hey, he's got a guaranteed seat, you don't want a guy in a different power unit, learning different mapping, learning different terminology, only to turn around and have to forget all that. And now you have to learn the Red Bull terminology. And oh, by the way, if it's 2025, it's the last year with Honda. And oh, by the way, next year we're switching to Ford. So it's all going to change yet again. So that would be four different power units in 3 years.
He would be the king of power units. Maybe my mouth is
off on that. He would. But that's asking a lot of a kid, even one as talented as Liam Lawson. The Drugovic thing I think makes a little more sense. Mercedes power unit versus Mercedes power unit. So I could see that, but I don't know if Aston Martin would again want to be able to loan him out. Williams would have to come up with extra money, and yeah, they're well funded now, but I don't know if they're that well funded to start poaching drivers away from other places. I look at the Williams Academy. There's some guys in F2 that if they wanted to bring another one up, but that's an unknown commodity, just like Logan was an unknown commodity. So I don't know what you're gaining there. I know I'm trying to take my American flag off my chest here, but I think the logical move is to actually let Logan have another year. If it starts out bad, you don't give him a big a leash. If it starts out bad, it's continuation of this. Find another option. But for right now, I think they're best sticking with what they got.
What about Teo Pocher if he wins the F2 championship?
Well, the question is, what academy is he in?
Is he in Aston Ferrari?
Alfa Romeo or something like that, I thought.
He might be.
At least yeah, so I think they're... I think they're saving him for Alfa Romeo if they decide to ever change that lineup. Although that goes to Audi, so I don't know. But yeah, I think they'll probably stick with him. I wouldn't consider Mick Schumacher because I think you kind of go what the issue is with Sargeant right now. Mick Schumacher also had that issue, so I don't see the real benefit of switching him out. And because I can never miss an opportunity to mention him, I think the best option would be to bring in Alex Palou, but whatever. We don't have to. I won't dwell on that any longer. So anyway, moving on. Next up, the formula says, watch the Japanese Grand Prix on demand at 8 a.m. like a normal person. Sorry for the late message. The race has had more retirees than a South Florida subdivision, but the battles between teammates were fun to watch. I don't even know what to say about Checo anymore. I routinely criticized him, but this weekend was a whole new level of struggle for him. I really do like the guy, but his seat has to be hot, hot, hot. As far as my boys in orange, what a weekend. Oscar continues to impress. These last couple races have me feeling very optimistic. How are you feeling, Andy?
Feeling good, and for the first time in a long time, actually confident. And I'll tell you why. Because there's more good coming. I actually got this, a bit of an exclusive. I backed into this. So occasionally on the national show, I'll just tweet or YouTube those guys. They asked me to call in because they know where my loyalties lie. And it just so happened that on the phone on that show while I happened to call in was one journalist, Chris Medland, who also happened to be interviewing, who happened to hear my comment when I said, oh yeah, there's more good coming. They're not even in the wind tunnel yet. And then Chris goes, I have to interrupt you there. They are in the new wind tunnel for the 2024 car. So that was a bit of breaking news, even to a guy like me. So yeah, there's more good coming. They're now in that new wind tunnel. They don't have to go to Cologne to develop this car. They're going to take all the good stuff from this year's car and put it into that car. Regulations are the same. They're stable. Driver lineup looks fast. Piastri's coming on the good. Maybe he's talented, maybe even more talented than Lando. And we've said Lando Norris is a seminal talent. So look out for these guys next year. I am beyond excited. Let's reel in the bulls. Lasso the bulls. Lasso the bulls.
No.
There you go.
We'll trademark it.
All right. So thank you to everybody who contributed to our fan email segment this week. We appreciate it as always. And again, great stuff from all the contributors. All right. So we will transition into our awards. Cody, I'll let you go first on this one. We'll start with the rubbish. What did we not like about this weekend? Cody, I like your candidates. Cody, you go first, D, and then I'll come up with the last of it.
All right. So I am giving out two rubbish awards this weekend, one for Perez and one for Sargeant. We already pretty much covered up all of their misdoings this weekend, but Sargeant looked like the rookie that he is, and Perez looked like the rookie he's not. So they both need to get out of this funk that they're in these last few races and pull together, because I would say that they're probably the two drivers in the hottest seats right now. I don't want Perez to lose the seat. I've always been a bit of a Perez fan. I'm a little disappointed to see how he's performing lately. I liked it much more at the beginning of the season when at least he was winning a couple races and keeping things exciting. And Sargeant, he's our American representative, so really don't want him to go anywhere. But he's still got a lot to prove. So, my rubbish award is going to the two missiles.
Yeah, I think we're all probably going to go into a similar vein here. I'm just specifically, it is Perez on Magnussen. Just watching that is beyond painful. For as experienced as he is, it's just can't be doing that. Just can't be doing that.
Yeah, so mine is going to go out to Red Bull yet again for stretching the rules with that kind of ridiculous Perez. You get to come out, do a lap, and then go back and DNF twice. And the FIA also for letting that happen. We've talked about reading of the sporting regs. And look, it was a legal thing to do. And the FIA is going to close the loophole? Great. Wonderful. Why did it have to have this ridiculous thing happen before somebody takes a look at the damn rule book and goes, I wonder if somebody's going to try to do this. Well, there it was. And yet again, here we are. And once again, Red Bull wins a battle for a useless, meaningless part of the war. I mean, congratulations. You've nuked the entire field this season, and you decide to throw one more bomb on the fire? For what reason? What reason? What? Why'd you do that? And guess what? You lost your loophole, so good on you for that.
I was buckling in for the rant. That was actually tamer than I was expecting.
I went full nuclear last week. I'm done after that. All right, so we will now flip over and we'll get into the analysis paralysis. I'll lead this one off. This goes out to George Russell. While I admire the gumption and the moxie and the wanting to do for a go-for-it move, there was never any data that told you that thing, that one-stop race on a track that everybody was saying had tied tire deg, that most engineers were talking two or maybe even three stops was the way to go. That thing was never going to fly, and it didn't. And he fell like a rock. And he allowed basically Sainz to get the jump on him because of that. He probably was maybe one or two positions higher. Could have maybe come in third or fourth, not third, but fourth, maybe fifth. But yeah, definitely didn't work there. So George Russell, my analysis paralysis is for you because it wasn't from your pit wall. You did that. Dee, what's your thought?
100% agree. Don't need to go any further into that one.
Cody, what's your take on analysis paralysis?
I didn't really feel there was a super strong candidate, although now that you're talking about the tire deg thing, I do kind of remember that teams were saying that the tire deg was such that the soft tires were not staying at peak performance over a qualifying lap. So yeah, maybe the one stop really wasn't a great idea. However, I'm going to give this one to Alpine because I thought it was a little goofy to be, you know, pulling switches on your drivers and having to go back and forth and giving places back over 9th and 10th, or I guess potentially 8th and 10th. You know, there's not a lot of points on the table there. All you did was make one of your drivers really pissed off. And whether he was right to be pissed or not, you know, I guess I figured he would have known they were giving that position back. It does seem a little goofy to be making those kind of calls with your drivers fighting for, you know, a handful of points. Just take the three, be happy with it, and, you know, move on to the next one.
All right, very good. So now we will move on to the dark horse of the day. This was a tough one for me, especially given how everybody finished. So, Dee, I'll let you go first. What you got for the dark horse on the day?
It doesn't feel like a dark horse, but it's just not going to be driver of the day. So I'm going to give it to Norris once again. I guess this is just McLaren as a whole, the dark horse over the course of the season, because never did I think this comeback would be possible. But yeah, Norris, Piastri, I guess, in the same vein, pulling a double podium for McLaren.
Cody, what's your thought?
I kind of didn't think there was a really good candidate for dark horse. I think just about everyone finished where we were thinking they were going to finish, at least based on qualifying. So being that he's the only rookie that's really performing to any degree right now, I think I'm going to give this one to Lawson. He did finish ahead of his teammate Yuki Tsunoda yet again. And despite the fact that there's a lot of things that factor into the race that caused that, and that Yuki Tsunoda did out-qualify him, facts still stands that he finished in front of Yuki. So I'm going to give it to Lawson.
Yeah, I kind of said Lawson's as good of a choice as anybody here because, again, this was really kind of a decanting of the normal finishing order and everybody finished and not, even though there were lots of DNFs, the DNFs really kind of didn't slot into where you would expect them to be other than maybe Perez. So, yeah, there wasn't a lot of field turmoil here. So, yeah, I'll give it to Liam Lawson because as good as a choice as anybody. And, yeah, good on you, kid. Third race in, still doing good. All right, so we will now move into the driver of the day. I have a funny feeling this is a clean sweep here, but Dee, I'll let you go first.
For what feels like the 95th time this season, it's Max Verstappen.
Cody?
Yep, it's Max. He finished too far out in front to give it to anyone else.
Yeah, the only mystery I would have about this award is if I tried to engrave it into stone. Max Verstappen going to take this one walking away. Damn, that was impressive. if nothing else. All right. So one last thing to do before we hop on out of here for the night. We need to talk about predictions. Cody's been giving it to me a good chunk of this season. I struck back, and I struck back pretty damn good. I took it 7-3. So, Cody, you got the pole sitter for Max. You got P1 on the podium, and you did get the P9 bonus pick. So good job there. I managed to nail the times. As bad as I was at Singapore, I was much better here. So I got the pole sitter. I got the qualifying time within maybe a tenth or two. P1 on the podium. My homer pick, Lando, comes home P2 on the podium. Fastest lap time, fastest lap driver. And I got the prop bet because Yuki Tsunoda made Q3. So way to go, local kid, for that.
I was particularly impressed with your guess on the qualifying time because I was like, holy crap, you got it within 0.2. We never do that. We're like 10 seconds.
I was going to say it. So our average is now 5.5 seconds off considering last week. So over the course of the last 2 weeks, we're getting better. That's what we're doing. We're trying to get in, we're improving. All right, so I guess that will do it for the Japanese Grand Prix. Any final thoughts before we close this out? Dee, it was nice to see you again. Hope we can make this a more regular thing if we can. Again, we're all going to be – this is the contingent of people that will be at COTA in just a little over – under a month's time. We got a week off. We got Qatar. And I hope you all like the sprint format because we're about to do it again and then again. So get ready.
I'm excited to see a sprint race. I think it's going to be make the weekend just that much more exciting. I'm not a huge fan of the sprint format overall, but you know, being at the race, it makes it a little different. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Excited to see Qatar too, because we've only had one race there back in 2021, and that was like the only race that season that I didn't watch because I had something else going on. So I've never really seen a race at this track. Be something interesting.
That's because it's supposed to be a MotoGP track. It's not really designed for F1. Oh, Dee, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know that you missed all that much back when we did it in 21. But, yeah, I think there was like a Alonso podium, and that was the highlight.
Oh, I'll take another one of those, please.
Mm-hmm. It's the track that looks to me like a dog trying to jump up and crack and try to jump up and get a bone. Like you see his neck. And you see kind of it's weird. I don't know. I just see shapes.
I'm going to have to take
that. But that may be me doing that when I just look at the track overlays. But anyway, lots of flowy turns. Very, very flat. Very, very flat. And will be a night race. So should be back to kind of our normal, I guess, European wake-up times for the race.
I think it's even later in the afternoon.
Yeah, it could be. It could be because it's later.
It's a night race there.
Yeah, they usually want the sun to go down because no more windstorms. So yeah, so we'll be back. Cody and I will be on the preview for that next Wednesday, hopefully. And then we'll see who's with us to do the recap of the Qatari Grand Prix. I guess that's what you call it. And then we'll set the stage for Circuit of the Americas and the U.S. Grand Prix, which I am beyond excited for, especially given my team's turn of form. Think something good's going to happen. Positive affirmations. That's where I'm going. All right, folks. Any final thoughts before I hop on out?
Nope. I think we covered just about everything.
All right. So for everybody connected to the show, as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.